Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favourite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah!
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon! That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. Wow. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made. You're listening to the Oz Movies Podcast, only on the Oz Network.
It is the Oz Network's Oscar 10 Days. That's what it is, as we move into the second half, into the sixth movie of the year, the annual Best Picture nominated movie about Nazis, this year being The Zone of Interest, the hour and 45 minute non-English speaking one where you've got to read for a bit, which is fine, but starring everybody's favorite new German actress who we only discovered yesterday, but she's in another movie today, Sandra Hüller, and a bunch of other actors that none of us have heard of because we're not German, but I'm sure they're good in their own country. Kristen Friedel is good. Well, not in this movie. He's a Nazi, so not good.
Great man.
I'm sure between 1939 and 1945, he was a great man amongst the majority of Germans, and then later found out for what he did. In a very interesting movie that Noah Groves called The Zone of No Interest. So we'll find out today if there's much interest from us. My name is Ben and that's gas. I don't know. I can't quote this movie. It's not appropriate. Neither was that quote.
The first person ever to put sound effects to the Holocaust.
I mean, what else am I meant to say in this movie? Oh, yeah, I'm German. Have some strudel.
My name is Colin, and how many bowel movements do you have in a day?
Oh, I forgot about that one. Start again. This is one of these ones where, again, like you see the 10 movies every year that got nominated. Generally, there's a couple that you've seen because I feel you've got like Oscar bingo, right? Like you've got your one or two that are like the blockbuster movies that everyone's seen. So you got Barbie and Oppenheimer on there to please the plebs like us, the let's watch the Hollywood movies. Then you've got your generally like sort of quirky, weird ones that some people will see, some people won't, but then they'll win Oscars, so people will see that. The Everything Everywhere All at Once every year, right? Like, oh yeah, I'm going to see that now that I've seen that. The what was the fish fucking movie a few years ago?
Shape of Water.
Shape of Water, right? Like that one, like those sort of movies. And then you've got your standard like hoity-toity period pieces where it's like, oh yeah, you know, this is either going to be weird or good. This year it's Poor Things. And then you've generally got your World War like one or two movie that's either going to be like, yeah, we're the Allies, fuck you all, or the, we're Nazis, did we do the right thing or not? And that's what we've got this year with The Zone of Interest. And Noah said he didn't like it. I knew nothing about it. This is one of the two that we couldn't get tickets to see at the movies. Yeah. And then when we finally could, we were like, yay, we can see it. And I got to say, all the reaction that you and Noah have both had to Anatomy of a Fall, that I was drawn to it. I couldn't keep my eyes off it. That was this movie for me. Like, let's be honest, this movie doesn't really have a plot. It's just basically the Germans living a suburban life next to Auschwitz. Sounds like a pretty fun, raucous time at the cinema. But, like, it's just, it's kind of just basic fly-on-the-wall stuff where you've kind of, you know the context. You don't see like the horrors of it because you hear and you know what's going on. I think like Jonathan Glazer directing this, I said yesterday about how like you've got these directors who are not going to hold a candle to Martin Scorsese and to Christopher Nolan. I think they do much better performances as directors because you get something out of a movie where you're like, wow, I'm drawn to this style. It's very uniquely edited. I mean, I think we opened this movie with 5 minutes of a black screen, but nothing said. There's a really couple of pieces in this film which I'm watching going, like, have I missed something? But like, I don't know. There was just something that drew me to a movie with really no plot where you're watching horrible people just have a suburban life. While in the background you get subtle, like, you know, screams and gunshots and I'm swimming in a river with a piece of skull going past me. Like, this one of the, let's be honest, not one of, the most horrible thing in human history is occurring over the other side of the fence, and you've just got a family chilling, eating strudel and have gone for a swim. Like, it's just, there's just something subtly brilliant about this film, which I just could not stop watching.
I mean, this is where we're really flipped on Anatomy of a Fall, because I really like this movie. I thought it was great. I thought it was a lot better than Noah did, but it's definitely not top tier for me of the Best Picture nominated movies. And part of that may be because my expectations were different going in. I mean, I kind of knew the loose plot line of it. I also mistakenly got the wrong Nazi. I thought this movie was about Rudolf Hess.
Wrong Nazi. That's not Hitler.
But if you're familiar with Rudolf Hess, I mean, he survived and was tried and imprisoned as a war criminal and separated his family. So I thought, oh, this is going to be more about like somebody in Hitler's inner circle and dealing more with like the family and everything. But like, I also, as this movie was starting, I was expecting maybe a little bit more than, I guess the easy way to say it is somebody has to have knowledge of the Holocaust, has to have knowledge of history in order to really get the point of this movie. This isn't something that you can spell for an audience, which I appreciated. I don't know how much everybody else would appreciate if they don't know. But it is very fascinating how it's done. The idea that you're going to tell a story about the Holocaust, but you're literally watching it almost from the point of view of the family living next door, who probably kind of know, at least the Sandra Hüller knows. She's killed lots of people, but she knows. But
she recovered hard after getting found innocent, didn't she? She went full Nazi.
went right onto the next relationship. She had some fidelity
innocent,
issues.
Yes, I can burn some Jews.
She has bad taste in men. That's all I'm gonna say. But you see, like from the point of view of the children, where it's you're watching a movie about this horrific thing, and yet you're experiencing it because you know what's going on and the characters on screen either don't know or simply don't care, you know? And that was really fascinating to watch. This, kind of like you were saying with Anatomy of Fall, it's like, would I go out of my way to watch the movie again? It really took until the last scene before I'm really like, I really get what this movie's about. But am I going to go out of my way to watch it again? Maybe not.
I could. Like, I don't know. I was just drawn to it. I think, like, one thing I'll say, yesterday I mentioned how, like, this and Killers of the Flower Moon I went into thinking something. Like, I thought this was going to be like a movie where, you know, at the end they're all like, oh no, we did a bad thing, Jews aren't all bad, we're you know, and like they kind of like have a redeeming moment, like no, but like, I mean, you sort of get a guy dry reaching at the end going, all right, whatever. But like, no, there's no happy ending in this film. But like, I think that to me this month is all about the subtlety of the message. And again, in a couple of days when we get to a certain film, I will again be complaining heavily about that. But like, this is similar to me in like an American Fiction, in that like you've got a clear message. You've got like, this is horrible. This is, again, the worst thing that humans have ever done in history. It's literally happening over your back fence. But you've got a family here who is just living normal. And like, this is what I appreciate about this film. It's that like, you know, we're from the part of the world where the good guys, we stop the Germans from killing the Jews. Like as
personally.
Personally, Noah, Colin and I saved the day.
Yeah, Colin and I, we know Noah wasn't going to save anybody.
Colin was pulling the handle of the gas and selling more. He was building the chambers. But like, I think that from a German perspective, like, there were people who lived during this time who this was just like I thought of the children in this movie. Why does anybody think of the children? Like, they're being raised in a household where this is normalized. This is just day-to-day life to me. If we found out tomorrow that podcasting was worse than the Holocaust, we don't know any different right now. We're just going along with what we're doing. But in 5 years' time, we're being tried in Geneva for war crimes. And then the whole world is looking at us going, oh my God, that's horrible. How can you podcast and subject people to that terrible entertainment? It's not good. It's murder. Like, we don't know any different. So I like this kind of perspective where you're watching this and you're sort of like, again, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. But this is what it would have been like for a lot of people in Germany. Like, you know, she wakes up in the morning. She's got a maid. She's got a life. She's got an idyllic household. She's raising her children. She's a good mother. She's a good wife. The husband's a good, I mean, he's not that good. He's cheating on her, but whatever. People apparently do that. But like, it's just, it's normal life to them in the backdrop of something horrible. And this is done in a way where it's not like, was it Jojo Rabbit a few years ago, where it's kind of like, let's take the worst thing in human history and make it a bit silly. Like, we've got like young little kids who are dancing and singing and like, let's make it happy. Like, I like that you've kind of taken a horrible thing and you're showing it. And it's, again, it's not on that level of thinking that, oh, that's going to, we, you talked on it yesterday about how we don't need to have this twist and everything. Like, here I am thinking there's going to be this like redemption story, like not all Nazis are bad. No, these are horrible people. And like, he's just like going on his life, and the real life Nazi that he plays, like, did get tried for war crimes and executed like 2 years after this. So like, you know, there's no happy ending for this family, but like, it's just, I don't know. I found it a unique exploration of just this kind of family that didn't go out of its way to be like, Nazis bad, Jews good, like, you know, yeah, Inglourious Bastards style, let's kill them all. Like, it's just, it's a standard film of a suburban German family living their lives who just happened to be killing 6 million people over the back fence.
Yeah, like, I think that's where I think the message and the theme of this movie to me was more impressive than the movie itself. Because would I have rather had a movie that is told from the point of view of like, you know, oh, the poor Jews that are getting gassed, look at the atrocities, and then as an audience member, you're like, oh, this is so horrible. Exactly. Or the point of view of, oh, the Nazis who all hate them. The fact is, I mean, we don't know if all the, like, a lot of these Nazis too, even the soldiers were forced into serving, right? Yeah. You're saying like the families, there's soldiers who are forced into serving. But to me, this movie was more horrific because it's something, it's a way we haven't seen this story told before, which is, how much colder and more heartless is it that we know what they're doing, but it is so mundane to them. It is, it's bureaucracy 100%. That we're watching on screen, you know? Yeah. And even with the family, like you sort of sympathize in the scene where Sandra Hüller is talking about, you know, I don't want our children to be uprooted. This is our home. But you're like, but your home is next to Auschwitz, yeah, you know? There is probably maybe one or two moments in the movie where they show where it's like, she might not be like the most innocent wife. But for the most part, she's just a woman who's raising her family. And then, like you said, with the kids, the first thing I loved about this movie was like, it feels weirdly comforting to know that Nazis' children were just as obnoxious and just as whiny as my kids are. Yeah. And I mean that actually in
my kids are like Nazis.
I actually kind of mean it in the opposite way. It's like these Nazi children were just children, you know, they're no different then than they are now. And those, at least the kids, are kind of innocent in this movie. But you look at the fact, it's like they're growing up not knowing about all the horrible things on the other side of the fence or the other side of the river, you know? Yeah, it's kind of a crazy theme that this movie has. And I think the most impressive thing about it is we've never seen a story told like this before.
And that's what I like about it, because, again, you got to think about any moment in history where, from a certain perspective, that we've obviously got this like very one-sided view because we're on a certain side. There were Germans who lived during Nazi Germany who just lived a standard everyday life, you know. We haven't brought it up in a couple of episodes, and here we go again. There were family members of the 9/11 terrorists who just sat in houses while their husbands went and flew planes into buildings, who just lived normal lives. Like, I mean, it's just, who knows what Jamie's doing right now? She could be plotting 9/12. Who knows? But like this is the thing. Like, you just, people just live this. And like, I'm saying now, I think Sandra Hüller's character is more likable in this movie than she was in Anatomy of a Fall, because like, okay, she has a couple of moments in this film where she's like being very like mean and disparaging to like her servants who happen to be Jewish. But again, not defending the Germans being mean to the Jewish people, but like, that's what they don't know any different. Like, they've had this maniacal idiot at the top of their chain telling them and doctoring them all of this bullshit and propaganda and everything that is bred into them, right? That's all they know. So her treating the people like that is just standard German life at that point, which is sick. It's disgusting. But to her, that's normal. You know, it's no different to like if you watch a movie on slavery. Like, it's disgusting. In hindsight, it's wrong. But back then, they knew no different. So like, it's just, it's a unique perspective to see, again, like this, the way it's put together. And like, we keep talking about, you know, I'm sorry, I'm getting my rant 2 days early, but shut the fuck up, Barbie. Like, seriously, all these people talking about like, oh, Margot Robbie robbed and Greta Gerwig robbed. You got like 8 fucking Oscars, which none of them were deserved. Fuck off.
That I'll side with you on. I'm tired of hearing about the Barbie defenders thinking it deserves everything.
I'm sick of it. I am so sick of it. I rewatched Barbie and I'm sorry, it got worse for me. But anyway, this movie got no acting nominations. Like, how is that a thing? Like, I mean, I talk about
it. How much acting is there for them to do in it, though?
But like, I think the main guy, Christian Friedel, like, I'm not saying Sandra Hüller should have got a second one. I just think she's good. But I mean, for Christian Friedel, sorry I'm mispronouncing his name, but like, there's just that subtlety around what he does in that, like, he's kind of got no emotion. He's very German. He's got no emotion. Like, he's just to the point. But like, there's just certain things that he does, which I think are absolutely fantastic. And I just, I don't get how he doesn't get it. I mean, look, again, I was the one person on this podcast who is a Bradley Cooper fanboy, and he will get an Oscar one day. But I'm saying this right now. Take him out of the best acting and give Christian Friedel a gig for him, because, again,
I'll agree with that.
I don't side with you on the whole, like, you know, it's just an impersonation. But Bradley Cooper just, it was a two-hour jerk off of give me an Oscar and say, oh, it's not going to work this. You'll get it eventually, Bradley. It worked for Leo. You'll get one eventually. I think Leonardo DiCaprio probably deserved one over you, Bradley Cooper, this year. Sorry to say. But,
yeah
I just think that Christian Friedel was fantastic in this role, and just a very, you don't have to be over-the-top Bradley Cooper darling style of acting to get an Oscar nod. I think that, you know, Christian Friedel was, I mean, if Lily Gladstone's going to get an Oscar, and no disrespect to Lily Gladstone, I'm not saying she did a bad performance, but I think compared to some of the other roles, she's not as good as some of the other people. So I think that if Lily Gladstone's getting nominated for her performance, I think Christian Friedel should be getting nominated for his performance.
I mean, to me, Jonathan Glazer is the star of this movie. And I also think it's daring.
True.
That you have a British director making a British film, but making it all in a foreign language. And
yeah,
the international feature category is kind of a joke. Like, what is international feature?
They changed it, didn't they, from foreign language film, I think, to make it like, so like an Australian film can win it now. Like, I think they it a bit more diverse. But
you see, they said that because, like, well, we don't want to single it out as being foreign language. But now you've literally just opened it up so that all of your English language filmmakers can qualify for another award, which I don't agree with, you know?
Well,
but
I'm with you. And again, like, as we keep saying, I'm not, like, pick a lane. You shouldn't be allowed to be nominated for Best Picture and Best Internet. I mean, this is the only one of what our, how many do we have that are foreign language? 2.5 movies that are basically three foreign. I mean, I would say three. I'd say Past Lives is technically fully in Korean. You know,
it's no different than this. It's an American movie in another language.
Anatomy of a Fall is pretty much all in French. I mean, this is the only one of the three foreign language films that is in, I guess, fully non-English. I mean, even Killers of the Flower Moon, I'd say, what, a quarter of that is in non-English. But, like, this is the only one of the foreign films that is, I mean, again, I know it's usually the production, like, the country of origin is where it's going to go, but yeah, I think, I mean, sorry if I'd interrupted you, you have more things to say, but I mean, we know this is going to win Best International Feature Film, right?
Yeah. Now, the only other thing I'd say is, like, I don't think that any of the actors stand out, because I don't think that's the point of the movie. I mean, so much of this movie is just about, it's true, about the shots, how Jonathan Glazer designed these shots of sometimes kids running through the house and
so
puddles
well
on the floor, people sitting in gardens. Yeah, and the movie looks incredible. Like, it's got to be some of the best cinematography I've seen all year.
And how do you make Auschwitz look beautiful that you want to visit it? And not like, because I mean, this is the thing, you don't actually see Auschwitz. You see it at the end in like a very like, I mean, the last scene is just something like, again, it's done differently. Like you said, like, if you don't know what's going on, if you have no knowledge of the Holocaust or anything like that, then yeah, it's going to be a little bit hard to read. But like, that's why I like the subtlety of it. And again, I'm not saying this to rip into Barbie, but like, you can do a movie like this and be subtle and know what they're trying to say without shoving it down your throat. And this is what I'll, and then you get the last scene where, I mean, I've not been to Auschwitz, you have not been to Auschwitz, but like, just see that you've just got like a couple of cleaners coming in, sweeping the floor, and you've got this disgusting thing.
Washing the windows.
Exactly. But then you've got this idyllic landscape of like, I mean, the rivers look beautiful, the scenery, like just like everything around it just looks so gorgeous. But like right next door, the worst things that's ever happened is going there. This got nominated for 5 Oscars. So this has got the same as American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, and Zone. It's funny. I think we've kind of got these are the 4 films I feel that will top our 4. Like as a collective 3 on this podcast, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Zone of Interest are the ones that I feel will get the most love for all of us. Even though Noah put Zone of Interest low, I think Anatomy of a Fall, I liked enough to put it up high enough. You and Noah obviously loved it. We both loved, all of us loved American Fiction, The Holdovers, and this is sort of, I think, you know, there. So, but they all got 5. I mean, again, how Barbie gets 8, whatever. So, obviously, Best Picture, sadly, won't win. Best Director, sadly, won't win. Although, looking here at Director Odds, second last. So, apparently, Martin Scorsese is the lowest on this list. So, here I was saying that it was a fight between Nolan and Scorsese. Scorsese's bottom of the list. So Jonathan Glazer is actually 3rd favorite to win this. Justin Triet's 4th. And Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things is 2nd. So also got nominated for best adapted screenplay, best international feature, and best sound, which, again, Oppenheimer's going to shit it in the technical categories, but I surely this has got to be at least second favorite, because the sound's very unique in this. I think, again, it's subtle.
There's more sound than there's dialogue.
It's second favorite. Like, this is ahead of Maestro, Mission Impossible, and The Creator. So, you know, a couple of big Hollywood blockbusters there that it's above it for. So
this isn't technically sound, or maybe they included it in, because I don't even know if it's music. But one of the most impressive things about this movie is how calm and quiet everything is, despite what's going down. And then the second the movie ends, it is the most unnerving, loud music you've ever heard. Which I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because I think it got me about halfway through the film. Like, is there a score to this film? Is there anything? Just the editing, again, the opening scene, I swear, is 5 minutes of black screen. Like,
the slowest fade out of the title.
Yeah, even I'm going, have I got a dodgy copy again, or what's going on here? And then there's this, middle sequence where they do these kind of, shots of flowers, and then you kind of cut to this bright red screen, which, again, it's kind of, I like it when a filmmaker does something that's almost a bit unsettling. Like, we obviously just did Man on the Moon, and kind of Andy Kaufman did things to kind of mess with your mind to think that there's something technical wrong with the thing to get a laugh out of it. But, I appreciate that you go into a film like this and you do something that kind of makes you a bit like, huh, what? Like, what's going on? Like, one of my most random, this is random, but I think you'll get my point. One of my most random best endings to a TV series ever. And I know you've never seen Damages, but Damages literally ends on the most uncomfortable, nerving shot on Glenn Close's face. And I swear it's 5 minutes. I swear they just sit there and zoom in on her face for 5 minutes and then they just cut. That's the end of Damages. And to me, it's the perfect ending. It's kind of how people talk about The Sopranos. I've not seen The Sopranos, but I know what the ending is. And either you love it or you hate it, right? It's brilliant or it's terrible. And I kind of just think you sometimes have unnerving ending, which makes you think more and makes you interpret things more. And I think this film does that. There's just something around it. I'm buying this film. I'm guessing, are you buying it still?
Yeah, I'm still going to buy it. And it's not going to be super high in my rankings, I think, by the end of this. Or maybe it will, because... some of the ones still to come up, my opinions are slightly changing on. But currently, this will be, I guess, second last for me. Basically, what you did with Anatomy of Fall yesterday. This is all revenge for Anatomy of Fall. Let's just be honest about it.
You prefer Anatomy over your Zone of Interest.
Well ahead of Maestro and a little bit behind Past Lives.
I've got this third overall. So Holdovers and American Fiction are still one and two. I've got this behind them, just above Past Lives. Past Lives sticking up high. I like that. Anatomy of a Fall, and then Maestro last. So, there you go. Which tomorrow, I think I'm still watching it. 28 hours of Martin Scorsese once again showing that I'm Morton Scorsese, and I can make a film as long and as arduous as I like because I'm Martin Scorsese. This is the one that, I think was the earliest getting all the buzz, right? Even more so than Oppenheimer, I feel, because I feel this was being, marketed very early. And, I remember when this was first announced, this is going to sweep the Oscars, this is going to do everything. And I'll say right now, this isn't a bad film. I went into it with a completely different perspective because I didn't know the true life story of everything that this is based on. But, if you can get through it, it's kind of like The Irishman. You're like, yep, all right. That was another Martin Scorsese. I swear his next film's going to be 8 hours long. They get longer and longer.
I have some issues with this movie, but I will say compared to The Irishman, which I'm pretty sure I binned, I like this one a lot more.
We both rented it. I'm seeing it right here.
I would go back and bin that. That's not a good movie. This one was a lot better. And despite its runtime, I think the one thing I've been telling people who haven't seen this is you might be surprised at how good the pace is for the movie, or the energy of the movie more than the pace, I think. It's got a very fast-paced energy to it.
Sure. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Sorry, I was trying to read quotes from Zone of Interest. It's three on IMDb. So other than that, Ghostbusters is starting this week and other great things because we're a great podcast. My name is Ben, and I wasn't really paying attention. I was too busy thinking how I would gas everyone in the room. Oh, Ben, stop.
And my name is Colin, and Heil Hüller.
Thanks for downloading this episode of the Oz Network. Make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast by Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or by copying our RSS feed into your preferred podcast provider. And while you're there, please drop us a rating and leave us some feedback. You can also be sure to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and happenings from the show, as well as finding out how you can get involved in upcoming episodes by following our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as getting everything you need under one roof at theoznetwork.net. Thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you next time. Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favourite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah!
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon! That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. Wow! For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made.